Welcome, everybody, to Dragon Quest FM, where we talk about and obsess over Dragon Quest. I'm Austin.
And I'm your new best friend.
And you're not my new best friend. You're my old best friend.
I'm their new best friend. You're my old
best friend. Their new best friend?
Their new best friend.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. And this week, we're going to be talking about Hendrik and Jasper in Dragon Quest XI and symbolism in Dragon Quest XI. And this was a Patreon request from one of our newest patrons, Shelby, who asked us to try to do an episode about symbolism in Dragon Quest XI, and they had some really good ideas, especially about Hendrik and Jasper. We were like, hey, this could actually make like several interesting episodes now that we think about it. And also we realized that we had never done an episode entirely dedicated to Hendrik and Jasper, which is weird.
It really is after all this time.
Yeah, so we decided to focus this one on symbolism in Dragon Quest XI, but really narrow it in to Hendrik and Jasper, and then move on beyond that in future episodes. So for those of you who maybe have not played Dragon Quest XI in quite a while, if you haven't played it at all, then huge spoiler alert. We're going to be spoiling things, like major story spoilers are going to happen in this episode. But if you haven't played it in a while, as you will remember, Hendrik and Jasper are kind of like the, I don't know, dynamic duo under the king, who are after the Darkspawn, and they're like chasing after, you know, the Luminary and then the Luminary and Eric and everything, especially through earlier portions of DQ11. They're kind of like the recurring antagonists, I guess, is how you would put it for them. They're kind of like the they're like the Biggs and Wedge almost.
they just keep showing up no matter what, no matter where you go. They're following you and they're there.
Yeah, and then of course one of the best twists I think in all of Dragon Quest XI is that Hendrik not only turns over to your side but also becomes a playable party member, and a really good playable party member.
He is so good. Like, once he's there, it's hard to take him out of the party.
It really is. And, you know, it's one of those things that they did such a great job of hiding, and they still hide to this day for the most part. You know, he's not on the cover anywhere. He's not even listed like in the collector's edition art book and everything. He's not even listed as like a playable party member or anything like that. It's just like this huge secret. And one thing that I really appreciate too about just like the Dragon Quest fandom in general is that people, I feel like, do a really good job of keeping that a secret too. Like, especially for people who don't know yet, and you'll see it less now. And I mean, to be fair, the game is 4 years old now, so it's understandable. But especially there for like the first couple of years, it was kind of like you didn't mention it because you didn't want to spoil it for anybody. Like, you didn't dare mention that Hendrik was playable because you wanted other people to kind of get this huge surprise and get this huge reveal themselves.
Yeah, that's one of the things that in the game, like, I'm thinking back, and I'm pretty sure that I got spoiled on him joining the party just by looking around and talking to you, because I didn't really care that much about spoilers and you and I were talking. But when it happens in the game, the way that it's all put together and the way that the narrative works, it's definitely one of the more entertaining and interesting parts of the game to me.
Yeah. It's like, I think you did get, I think you got spoiled, but I think it was your own. I think it was you were asking me about it.
It may have been, yeah.
Because I'd talked about like how there were some really big surprises in the main story, and you were like, tell me. And I was like, are you sure, dude? It's going to ruin stuff. And you were like, I don't care. I want to know.
And that was, I believe, before the Switch version came out, when I wanted to finish it. So I'd started it and then pressed pause, waiting on the Switch version and waiting on 11S. And so then I believe it was in that kind of gap between that.
It was, yes. That's when it was. You had started it, and then you were like, I'm just going to wait until 11S comes out and beat it then. And in the interim, you just wanted me to spoil everything for you. And I did for the most part. I don't think I told you everything. I think intentionally omitted some parts. But yeah, Hendrick, I think, was one thing that I did tell you about, or maybe whenever you watched me play it, even he was like in my party. Because I know
that may have been what it was.
I know you came over because we were up in Tennessee for the holidays, and I know you came over whenever I was in the like post game stuff and was just finishing up some like trophy cleanup. Because I was
yeah, I think so
platinum it, and so I think you probably saw him in my party because I tended to keep him in my party rotation pretty regularly.
I do have to say that Hendrick being a playable character, he does have my favorite costume in the game. Hendrick as a clown is one of the most delightful designs in the entire game.
It is wonderful. It's not a costume though. You don't get it. You don't get to keep it.
You like, just have it during the dumb parade.
For the wonderful parade, you mean.
Dumb parade.
Man, I cannot believe you don't like that parade. Something is wrong with you.
Like, it's the most annoying part of the game to me, but man, do love Hendrick as a clown. I can't believe they didn't let us have that as a costume, though. Because it's in there.
I know. It's like Hendrick and Rab, too, both in their little clown attire. It's just like, why? Why did you not let us have this?
But you can get the dumb peacock thing for the Luminary.
And it dances.
It's my least favorite one of all of them. And that's the one they let you have with a costume. And I'm just like, man, you dropped the ball, Square Enix.
Anyway, BJ's terrible opinions on the parade side. Let's get into some of the symbolism here. Now, Shelby went above and beyond and kind of gave us a lot to work with here, and had clearly put a lot of thought into this, and I don't want to just completely like ride off of what they were telling us. But I do want to, I want to share some of this, that she sent to us, because I think it's really interesting. Yeah. One of the most obvious examples, in my opinion, is the juxtaposition of light and dark when you first encounter Jasper and Hendrick. Hendrick is wearing a black suit of armor and Jasper is wearing a white one. And Jasper is also the first one to speak to you, which leaves the initial and very brief impression that Jasper would be the kinder of the two. So I thought that was interesting. And
yeah,
I don't know that I ever clocked that Jasper was the first one that kind of speaks to you. I do remember, seeing the you know, white, black armor sets.
Yeah.
And thinking that it was possibly some misdirection, because even from the get-go, I don't know, for me, like, Jasper just always seemed like the wolf's in sheep's clothing, and Hendrick seemed like the good guy who was just doing bad things because he didn't know any better right now.
Yeah, like that was what he was doing. That was what he believed. That was what he was told and ordered by his king. And I always thought that Jasper was going to be, you know, continually be kind of a good character. And part of it is because he was softer spoken. That the they play him up to be the one that is going to be the bad guy by subverting the expectation that you see the knight in white shining armor is going to be the one that helps you out, when in fact, nuh-uh. And one of the things that I mean, most people are aware of, you know, the black suit of armor, the black hat, meaning the bad guy, and the white armor. And white suit of armor or white hat, all that goes into the good side of things. But I think more stuff is starting to play against that in some way. And this game entirely did, especially we've talked about it before, where the Luminary is wearing purple and green, which was traditionally the colors of the villains. Going
Dragon
in,
Lord,
and people
yeah.
thought the Dragon Lord, so he was going to be a villain going in, or a bad guy, somehow influenced by things like that. So people were talking all about it before the release, that a lot of the colorization of this game and palette choices have been in order to try to trick the player and the audience, at least to begin with.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that you really have to say about Dragon Quest XI is that in regards to symbolism, especially, is that it really toys with those kinds of things. Like it knows what these things represent, and then it will just like kind of turns it on its head. It's like, okay, we know white, you know, represents pure and good, and the black armor can represent, you know, evil and, you know, the villain, but we're gonna switch those. And, you know, they totally knew what they were doing going in, giving the luminary that design, but also, you know, letting you know that he's on the run, calling him Darkspawn. Yeah. And, and, you know, especially in the earliest parts of Dragon Quest XI, it's one of those things where it's kind of like, the game doesn't tell you, like, it doesn't flat out tell you like, hey, you really are a good guy. And it's something that you just kind of take for granted because you're playing, you know, the main character of a fantasy game. So you just kind of take it for granted that, hey, you are the good guy, but it really doesn't tell you right away, where it almost kind of toys with that too, where it's like, okay, well, maybe Hendrik and Jasper are right for chasing after you. Maybe you really are this, you know, Darkspawn. And so I think it does play with that kind of stuff in very interesting ways. And I think that the Hendrik and Jasper dynamic, it's really interesting. And it's also kind of like I realize this was made by a Japanese studio and this is a Chinese thing, but the yin and yang kind of side of everything, like it very much looks like that, just in that they're very different. But yet they really complement each other, and they're almost like the Gemini kind of thing, where it's like they go hand in hand. Right. They're very much like twins. And even in flashbacks, seeing them, you know, growing up and everything, where it's like, it's very much seems brotherly rather than, you know, friendship. And it seems very much like him is the older brother, in that relationship. And so I think that's really interesting there, between Hendrik and Jasper, but also, you know, how that ends up relating to, the luminary and Hendrik in the like last half of the game, because it's like they kind of, those roles have switched. It's like now the yin and yang there is the luminary and Hendrik instead of Jasper and Hendrik. And maybe Jasper is jealous.
Yeah. And I mean, it was, and I can't remember, you will know this. I can't remember if it was 11S that added in all of the story that explained more of that. Where it was explaining that Jasper felt as though he were the one being left behind, that he were being treated as less than. Was that in the original, or was that one of the additions, like the stories for the individual characters?
No, the stuff with Jasper and like the backstory there, a lot of that was in the original. It's been so long since I've played the original and everything that I'm trying to remember specifically, but yeah, I think all or most of it was in the original, because I definitely remember that being a thing where it's like, you saw that he's lived his entire life in Hendrik's shadow. He's looked up to Hendrik. Then he feels like he's gotten, you know, passed over, because of Hendrik. He feels like Hendrik, you know, slighted him, because of Hendrik getting promotions and Jasper kind of just, you know, hanging back from that. And then I feel like that's probably why he goes just full on like Nick Cage and Face Off, crazy villain. Where
he does,
he loses it, and I think part of that might be because of, you know, Hendrik teaming up with the Luminary. It's kind of like he sees his friend. He always lived in this guy's shadow, and then he just, you know, is completely abandons him now, and just kind of tosses him aside, at least from Jasper's perspective. And so I think that could be a big moment for Jasper. You know, it's kind of like the memes now that people share, where it's like, this is how I become the Joker.
It is, yeah.
This is how Jasper became the Joker.
It's true. It really is. You know, speaking of the Joker, this is a complete side tangent. Have you seen that they're in with the Joker, you know, the Folie X Do or whatever it's called? I can't say it.
Folie
X
Do? Yeah.
Yeah, that they are in talks. Like, there's rumors that it's going to be Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn.
Yeah, it's a musical.
Yeah, Jennifer told me that last night. And that is just, of course it is.
Whenever I saw that that was the sequel name, I mean, I assumed that it was going to be a Harley Quinn kind
of
thing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Because, you know, Folie à Deux. So I was just like, yeah, that's got to be, you know, Harley Quinn. Like, that's got to be who the other character is.
Of course, yeah.
Unless it's like Two-Face and it's like a road trip movie. It's just that would, Joker and
we
Two-Face.
Need a movable feast with Two-Face and the Joker.
Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, it was Todd Phillips, you know, and he wrote Due Date, the Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Zach Galifianakis road trip comedy.
That would be fantastic.
It's just that, but... except it's Two-Face and Joker. Yeah, except now Todd Phillips is really pretentious and only makes serious cinema.
Yeah.
So, but
either
yeah,
way, I wanted you to know that I didn't know if you knew that Lady Gaga was the rumor for Harley Quinn.
Yes.
So, and you said Joker.
Yeah. I did know that.
Good. You needed to.
Cool. I like Lady Gaga. So
I do too. That's why I was like, that might actually be good, but it's weird because it's like I never thought about her as Harley.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. Maybe I'll watch it. I don't know. I can't remember what this has to do. Oh, yeah. Jasper going full.
You said
Joker.
Jasper turning into the Joker. And so it got me down that train of thought.
Yeah. But ironically, it's Hendrick that dresses up like a clown.
It's true. Ba-dum-dum-dum. Subversion.
Yeah. So so that's kind of one aspect for it. And then another thing that Shelby brought up is related to their armor again is the gold suit of armor that Hendrick gets in the post game. Which she says Goal has several symbolic meanings. And I think that could apply to the special suit. Gold is a transition metal, which symbolizes spiritual flexibility, which relates in that Jasper's spirit can be argued to reside in the armor. Gold is highly valued and represents perfection. And that can be applied in that suit of armor has some of the best stats in the game. Gold is resistant to heat and acid, which translates symbolically to immutability, eternity, and perfection, symbolizing the eternal bond of friendship that Hendrick and Jasper share. And all of this tells me, A, this is all way too highbrow for us, but I mean, we were just making Joker jokes.
True.
But yeah, that's like some really clever insight there, I feel like, and totally things that I did not even like would have probably never thought of on my own. But I think that is a good point. And it also, I think, can relate to kind of Hendrick always being seen as this like golden boy.
Yeah.
You know, is that it's, you know, Hendrick, once you get this armor, you can make him your golden boy, like literally your golden boy. And so I think that kind of goes into that a little bit as well, is that Hendrick is your golden boy.
And, you know, the idea that it represents the perfection being the highest quality armor in the game, you know, some of the best stats like that, the idea of when Hendrick finally accepts the Luminary, like goes all in, that's kind of like his apotheosis where he earns that where he kind of transcends the ability of where he was like making up for it. For what he had done before, where he finally crossed that kind of threshold to be worthy of that kind of armor from what and that kind of boost from like doing true good as opposed to doing what he thought was good.
Yeah, look at you using $5 words.
I know, right? Where's my $5?
Yeah, but yeah, I could totally see that there as well, and I think that's one thing that like that not just Dragon Quest XI, but you see in a lot of fantasy, especially is that high fantasy, especially really toys with duality.
Yeah.
And Jasper, Hendrick, you know, you see that here, you see that with Erdwin and what's his name? Mordigan. Isn't that his name? And you see that, you see that with, you know, the Luminary Mordigan, you see that with even Veronica and Serena, you know, being kind of like two halves of like a sage at that point and everything, where fantasy gets a lot of like talk for using like threes as the magic number, mm-hmm. Three's magic. But I think that, you know, twos, duality and everything plays a big role in it too. And I think Dragon Quest XI, especially, you see that a lot. Like, there, like almost everything kind of feels like it comes in pairs. Even even the party members you recruit, you know, you get like Veronica and Serena kind of together, and you get Rab and Jade kind of together, and you have the Luminary and Eric, you know, together. And then for a long time, it's kind of like Silvando by himself. But then I feel like in a lot of the in-game stuff, especially with Don Rodrigo, like they kind of pair up Hendrick and Silvando quite a bit.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They even at that point rectify it and kind of replace Jasper. Not replace Jasper like emotionally, but kind of symbolically with Silvando because of the story with Don Rodrigo and growing up together as knights and training, where Silvando's kind of like a surrogate replacement for Jasper in the partnership side of things, not so much the emotional connection, because like he's always going to love Jasper. I mean, if you turned evil, I would still love you even after I had to kill you, but I would still love you.
You'd be like Obi-Wan.
It's true,
cutting my legs off and watching me burn by the lava pool.
It's true, except I would make sure I pushed you into the lava so you didn't come back as Darth Vader.
Yeah, as you should. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you do.
Yeah.
It's like if you're fighting a Dark Lord of the Sith, you push him into the lava all the way. It's always like, why'd you just walk away, Obi-Wan? You did all this.
Yeah. Also, if he's your best friend, like maybe put him out of his misery.
It's true. It's instead of sitting there, it's like if you chopped all of my limbs off and I was burning to death, I would be like, just come on, man. You won.
Yeah. Like just kill me at that point. Why are you leaving me here? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I would expect the same from you, sir. I'm glad we can agree on this.
I'm glad we can, and that we know that we both love the other afterwards.
For those of you just joining us, we have made a murder pact.
The best part is that it's not a murder suicide pact. It's just a murder. It's just,
it's like a fail safe in case one of us ever turns to evil.
It's true.
Yep. Yeah.
This is what you pay for, folks.
I think one thing that people, or at least, you know, people that I chat with Dragon Quest 11 about a lot of times, is that people don't necessarily talk about really how sad the whole Jasper and Hendrick thing is because,
yeah,
like, you know, I mean, I'll admit Jasper gets really obnoxious after a while, and you know, once you put him in your place, it feels kind of good. But, you know, but it is really sad, especially once you learn everything and once you see into their past, once you have everything explained to you and understand about Jasper and Hendrick, and, you know, Hendrick does the line about how he couldn't have ever been great without Jasper and all that kind of stuff. And it's like this really like sad, you know, like brother moment. And I don't know. I feel like a lot of times because Jasper like turns so much into evil, like people don't talk enough about how really like sad it is. And that, you know, Hendrick did really, you know, love Jasper and is really sad when Jasper dies. And there's even a, you know, there's even a soldier who like leaves flowers on Jasper's like grave right there inside the castle after he's defeated and all, who seems to be, who, you know, Jasper was apparently nice to him and he looked up to Jasper and all of that, where there's kind of like this whole unexplored side to Jasper that you don't get to see very much of, but when you do, it really humanizes him.
And that when you see it, and it's super sad because of the reasons that he kind of shifted into to evil, that someone was looking at him the same way, that kind of you know, that kind of symbolism of that it could happen to anybody, and that we don't actually know what we are to other people, was also kind of paralleled in that, because Hendrick had no idea that was how he thought about him. And just like Jasper had no idea about that dude.
Yeah, that is true. Sad.
Yeah, sad times.
Yeah.
Like this whole thing is sad. Like the entire storyline as you go through is really sad as you watch their friendship deteriorate as you know, as he turns into the Joker, as he goes like mad, actually.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing. Another thing too is, you know, people talk about Dragon Quest having like these, you know, black and white divisions a lot of times between its heroes and its villains, and I think that's a valid criticism for you know, main villains a lot of times, but I feel like Jasper is definitely one of those fully formed, you know, three-dimensional villains that are rare. I mean, not just in Dragon Quest, but just rare kind of in gaming in general, where it's not just a cut and dry, like, oh, this is definitely a bad guy, where it's like, yeah, he's definitely a bad guy at this point. Like, but you see, like, it really does a good job of showing and telling you, like, what drove him to this. Where it's not, it's not quite as just like, you know, Dragon Lord sitting in the throne room being like, I'm here. I don't know why Dragon Lord sounds like Waluigi, but
he does.
But he does in my mind. Yeah, I hope if we ever get a canon Dragon Lord voice, that's
what I hope that's like. What it is.
I would play that game.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that would be your favorite Dragon Quest game for that reason alone.
Yeah, it would definitely be my wife's favorite Dragon Quest game. Waluigi's like her favorite.
I do love Waluigi too. Like he's one I always pick if he's available. Usually. Yeah. I can't say always. Like there's a lot of times I'll go to Yoshi, but
yeah, this is the one. That's Waluigi is what she picks in, like, you know, Mario Party, Mario Kart. Mm. Any of that stuff. Not Smash, because he's not in Smash, and also we don't play Smash. But
but if he were, she would. If you did and he were, she would.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and so I feel like that even though, like, I think Dragon Quest XI does a good job with Jasper, where I feel like just everything from Jasper and Hendrik, like, there's not really a weak link here. Like, it's all handled very well from just the misdirection it has to, like, the symbolism there with the characters to just how it changes both of their character arcs. You know, I mean, Hendrik has one of my favorite character arcs in Dragon Quest XI and in any video game, you know, where he's, like, he's a bad guy who's chasing you, but he's not really a bad guy. He's really just good, and he's trying to do his duty, and then, you know, he realizes the error of his ways and just, you know, you meet up back with him and he's kind of got more of the, like, traditional, like, Erdrick looking attire on and has become the hero of Cobblestone and everything now when you meet up with him as the Luminary, and then you guys kind of team up, but also, like, he doesn't trust you right away and you don't necessarily trust him right away, and there's kind of like a fun dynamic there initially between the Luminary and Hendrik. And it's really well done because those are like the only two characters in your party for a little bit right there. And so it's like, it's a cool way of letting that relationship kind of get explored and have its time to shine. So I think that's, I think all of that is really cool. And
one thing that with that, like the idea of them coming together, all of it, and him, you know, getting to know each other, Hendrik's actual base personality never really changes. Like, he doesn't go through a shift from, like, grumpy old man to nice, kind of, he doesn't go from the shift from, like, crazy, cranky old man to, like, Harry Potter, like, number one Dumbledore, like, with Richard Harris. And, like, he never, like, changes that kind of base personality, but the direction of it is, just so well placed, like the way that the personality goes when he's interacting with the Luminary and then with Silvando, you can see it's still the same character. Like, he doesn't ever feel like not the guy he was introduced in, like, the first 20 minutes of the game.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. He doesn't feel that way.
Like, he changes, but he doesn't change. Like,
right. Like, he changes, but he grows. Not like it's not like he's still this very much like moral compass. You know, straight edge character.
He just had to find true north. I knew saying it would leave you like not sure where to go with that.
Yeah,
because you hate it.
I don't know where to go with it. I do hate it. I think that's a good place to end on. It's just that terrible joke. We're gonna look into this some more, because Dragon Quest XI is definitely one of those games that's full of symbols and just kind of you know, just from characters to, obviously, you know, like we discussed here, what they wear to just literal symbols that are in the game. So there's a lot of fun stuff to cover. But since Shelby used Hendrick and Jasper as examples, and we realized that we had never done an episode dedicated to Hendrick and Jasper, we wanted to focus that one on this week's episode.
Which is still absolutely crazy within, like, what is this, 4 seasons now that we've never just settled down on them?
Yeah. We did an episode on Hendrick back whenever we did all the playable characters. And so, you know, I haven't re-listened to that episode or anything, but I'm sure we talked about Jasper. I'm sure it came up.
Sure that you can't talk about Hendrick without talking about Jasper.
Yeah, but I don't think we've had a fully dedicated episode here to the two of them and kind of looking at them as a whole yin and yang, as the whole circle. So anyway, thank you guys for listening, and thank you, Shelby, for the suggestion here. Remember, you can talk to us on Twitter at DragonQuestFM. You can also talk to us on Patreon at patreon.com/DragonQuestFM, and you can help support this podcast, join our community, and even get to tell us what you want to hear us talk about, like Shelby did. If you want to talk to me individually, you can find me on Twitter at DragonQuestin.
And you can find me on Twitter at Professor Beej. If you want to talk to both of us and lots of other people, you can join us on Discord at discord.geektogeekmedia.com. And I don't do that other podcast anymore right now. So listen to me here.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye, y'all.